This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday and Wednesday night at 8 and 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or by going to our site at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. That's www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. You can also listen to us via satellite now on your Nokia phones. Just go to the website for details. We have a very special woman on our show tonight, and I would like to welcome Malika Chopra. Hi, Malika.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is an honor. Malika is an author, producer, and a spokesperson for the UNICEF, the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund. Malika is also the daughter of Dr. Deepak Chopra, author and guru extraordinaire. Again, I'd like to thank you for being with us tonight, Malika. You've written what I believe, Malika, to be an unbelievably amazing book. I think if people have never heard of it, they should, because to me, it's one of the most important books I've come across in child rearing. For many reasons. The book is called 100 Promises to My Baby, and you have a second book called 100 Questions for My Child. You know, Malika, I did a valuable work many years ago in a workshop where we whispered in another person's ear what we wanted to hear ourselves as a child. Things like, I am glad you were born. And other statements like that, I don't think people understand the power of promises to a child and the impact they have on the life and the psyche of a child. Can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Sure. I obviously grew up in the self-help industry in that world. My father being the girlfriend growing up with him as he kind of started his career. And it's interesting because despite growing up in that world, I never myself would say that I was on a journey of self-discovery as a kid. It was just what my father did. But when I got pregnant, that all changed, because the first time I felt that I really needed to know, who am I, what are my dreams, what are my goals, what's my purpose. And so it was really in my journey of becoming a mother that I started my personal journey of self-discovery. And the book really started off as thinking about what are the commitments that I want to make to my daughters. I have two girls now who are 6.5 and 4. What are the commitments that I want to make to them as a mother, and also to myself in terms of how I build a relationship with them. And I started sharing stories and writing things as if it was my personal journal. And my father gave me the idea of the promises, and it was just a beautiful process to come up with a one-sentence promise that encapsulated so much hope and desire and excitement in that relationship with my children. So that was the evolution of the idea. And it's interesting now looking back on the book, what's wonderful about those promises is that each one has grown into its own journey and process and reinterpretation.
You have two daughters. When you promise them, do they promise you back?
Yeah, it's very sweet. My daughters, I wrote the book, I started writing it as a journal, my own pregnancy journal when I was pregnant with my first daughter. Of course, when I had my daughter and it was just a journal entry, I didn't have any time to kind of continue working on it, and I never planned to make it a book. And then basically when she was about 2.5 years old, I decided, you know, I really want to relook at kind of that material I had written. And at that time, it actually worked out that I would write a book on it as well. And literally the day that I kind of finalized that I was going to work on this as a book, I got pregnant, confirmed my second pregnancy. So it was a very special time while I was writing it. My daughter, especially my 2.5-year-old at that time, it was completely a journey that we took together. So she loves the idea of promises. In fact, she thinks of it as our book, and it is our book. And whenever even I sign the book, she always makes sure she signs it along with me. And she very much knows that both the books have been inspired by her and her sister.
Well, you know, the first book, I 100 Promises to My Baby, the second book, I'm sorry, 100 Questions to My Child, from My Child. I think that was a book that probably I can understand. And I'll tell you why. I mean, children ask the most unbelievable and profound questions. So I think that's easy. But again, you said 100 Promises to My Baby. What made you even think that it was necessary to promise them anything?
You know, I think it's from that journey of self-discovery that I had mentioned, which is, you know, I actually started it with just writing stories, and then I found that in every story there was some kind of lesson, but something that I had learned from that, about how I wanted to approach my life or my relationship. And so my father had, I've grown up always being part of the rituals and things like that, and so he really helped guide me in terms of that process of making a promise in itself as a sacred ritual. And so the process of doing that then kind of begins a journey and a story around that and a mythology around that. So it really was also about the ritual itself of making a promise and committing to it. So it's that intent that we all plant, and later on we can talk about actually a new project I have, which is based on intent.
You know, we seem to be having a little bit of technical difficulties. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen and listeners. We're going to go to a quick break and see if we can work this out. I apologize to my guests and to our listeners. We'll be right back.
Join us on the People Speak radio show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network. Maybe you and me.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by After Downing Street.
Almi, the greatest mystic.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
According to polls, a majority of Americans support the impeachment of Dick Cheney. To make people aware of this, the Honk to Impeach campaign has been organized. People will be carrying Honk to Impeach signs in front of congressional district offices and TV and radio stations. Visit ImpeachSpace.com and ImpeachCheney.org for updates of this effort. And don't forget to honk for impeachment.
Hello, everybody. We're back. We have with us tonight Malika Chopra, the author, producer, and spokesperson for UNICEF, daughter of the famous Deepak Chopra. Thank you for bearing with us. We had some technical difficulties. That's what happens when you have live radio, Malika.
Yes.
I hope the sound has worked itself out now.
Yeah, I think it should be okay. I can hear you better as well.
Wonderful, wonderful, and I can hear you perfectly. Is it pronounced Malika or Malika?
Malika, yeah.
Malika. Malika in Arabic means queen.
Yes, that's
right. Did you
right.
know that?
So, it's yes. queen and it's jasmine, so we actually say it's the queen of flowers.
The queen of flowers, Malika Jasmine.
Yeah.
How beautiful. That's
yeah.
a lovely name.
Thank you.
Very, very interesting. And your work is focused primarily around children's issues with UNICEF. How did you get involved in UNICEF? And for those of you that don't know, portions of Malika's book, the proceeds go to UNICEF, and that is a wonderful, wonderful gift.
Yeah, no, I think again what happened for me is that, you know, I've always been involved with children and children's issues, but when I became a parent, you know, the empathy and the reality of what other mothers are going through became all the more powerful. So I just felt that it was a important gesture for me in writing these books to donate a portion of everything I got to programs for children. So for the first book, I did it to UNICEF, and we focused on children who are affected by HIV and AIDS. And for the second book, I actually went the other direction for 100 questions for my child. There's a wonderful group in New Delhi that works with slum children. And so for the second book, I'm donating 10% of the proceeds to that organization. So it's been an interesting experience working with a big foundation, wonderful foundation like UNICEF that does incredible work worldwide. And then for the second book, a more grassroots campaign.
Do you feel sometimes that, I know originally when UNICEF was started shortly after World War II to help the children of the tragedy of that war, are you finding now that they are still facing the same tragedies that they were shortly after the war?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, children around the world are still suffering from hunger, from disease. So these organizations that are really on the ground working with them provide a critical service to humanity. So absolutely the needs today are as if not even more urgent than they always have been.
One of the things that you're working with, I believe, too, is the HIV and AIDS epidemic that's currently just horribly attacking the children of Africa and various areas of the world.
Yeah, you know, our goal, I kind of worked with UNICEF to figure out what was the right fit for just the work that I was doing. And, you know, personally, I was very much affected by the plight of orphans, and orphans, and especially in Africa and India, who are affected by the HIV, AIDS virus. And, you know, these numbers were several years ago, but, you know, more than 3 million children under the age of 15, you know, are affected by the virus, and many of them are orphans. They don't even have the support of the family, let alone the resources to get treatment. So that's the wonderful work that UNICEF and others are doing.
Well, you know, I know one of the things that I found interesting was that UNICEF specifically targeted the education of girls in some of these countries. And I thought that was wonderful because a lot of these countries are not focused on that primarily. But that was an interesting little bit of information that I gleaned from that.
Absolutely. You know, the research is the research is showing, you know, it's the women and the mothers who make, you know, the decisions in families. And so the earlier that we can start educating girls and empowering them to, one, be economically more sustainable and to just, frankly, be educated about risks, health risks, and empower them to make the decisions, that really is one of the most effective ways to transform change on a long-term basis. So
and
it's a very.
Do you continue this particular work with UNICEF, or are you planning, or do you have plans to expand into other areas?
Well, you know what I've done is actually, you know, I wrote the two books over the last few years, and my journey post children was really being at home and writing those books, and then I had several hobbies. I've actually in the last 6 months taken a huge step, have actually kind of dived back into the more than full-time land of entrepreneurism. And I'm launching a new site called Intent. And the goal of Intent is to focus on personal, social, and global wellness. So really believing that our well-being, our personal well-being from health and relationships and balance and success in our life is very important. But as important are the well-being of society, so social rights, human rights, all of the great work that UNICEF and other organizations are doing, the well-being of the planet. So, you know, we need a healthy home, so everything that's happening in the green and environment with water, and then spiritual well-being. So I have actually, and our site has not launched as yet, but I can give your users a sneak peek of it at our beta site, which is at beta.intent.com. And, you know, that's really kind of where my personal journey has kind of evolved since my children started going to school and I found that I had a lot more time. But I think in the vein of what I've done in the past with UNICEF and others, our goal is to basically help spread awareness for all the wonderful work that organizations and individuals are doing.
Do you primarily do just informational talk about UNICEF, or do you actually fundraise for some of the UNICEF programs?
You know, with UNICEF, the relationship was very much based on I donated 10% of the gross revenue from the book and continued to do stuff to them. And, you know, I really believe that, and I speak about them, but, you know, they're the experts in terms of the programs. And so it's more a relationship in that context. And then, as I mentioned, for the second book, focused on a group in India called Project Y, which is working with street children and providing education to young girls and actually children with disabilities. So with each project, I've kind of done, you know, a relationship that helps financially and then also in terms of publicity.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, one of the books that probably you may want to consider writing is 100 Promises We Should Be Making to the Children of the World. I think
yeah.
that would be a worthy book because, unfortunately, our children are suffering in so many different ways, whether it be, you know, the issues of poverty, hunger, lack of education, disease, human trafficking, child slavery, you know, the workshop slavery. It's an unbelievably harsh world for many of our children. And that's very sad. You know, we do have some texts and emails coming in already. Some of our audience members are asking some questions. I'd like everybody to know that you can call us at 877-489-6350 or toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 888-228-4494. The numbers, again, are 877-489-6350 and U.S. and Canada, 888-228-4494. You can speak to Ms. Chopra. Malika, Malika, but I know it's Malika.
Malika is absolutely fine. No worries.
And we do have a question from one of our audience members. Let's see if we can get that up here. Sherry from Michigan, please describe some of the specific problems for UNICEF when dealing with Israel as UNICEF tries to assist Palestinians in Gaza.
So I honestly have to admit I am not tooled enough to address a specific question like that. What I would encourage people to do is look at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF website and reach out to them. But, you know, again, like I said, my focus and my comfort in speaking about what they're doing is more in the way that I've supported them through their books. So,
well, that's beautiful. You know, you have meditated with many of the great spiritual leaders of the world, Malika, and do you have any thoughts you can share about some of these people? I know you, Baba Ram Dass and some of the other gurus that you have meditated with even as a child. That must have been a wild growing up.
Sure. You know, again, I'm very fortunate, and I don't think I ever realized how fortunate I was to really have grown up with many of the kind of spiritual luminaries of the past few years. I grew up with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and the TM movement and started meditating when I was 8 years old, and I think my brother was 4 years old, and started even doing more advanced meditations by the age of 16. So, and it's, as a child, you just take these things for granted. Now looking back on it, of course, the experiences that we had with different teachers from around the world are really gifts that we cherish forever. So, you know, I think those experiences gave both my brother and I a sense of security and a sense of self that we really were tools that we had throughout our life to stay centered and stay in the moment more and more.
Unbelievable. You know, we have another question coming through our text message. John from the Canadian Rockies, and this is a pretty powerful one. Brace yourself, Malika. Malika, your thought on the role children play in modern warfare, please. I heard that children and truth are the first victims of war. How can our species be so barbaric?
I know. What a sad, a very sad and a very powerful reality. You know, I have a promise in my book about children always looking on the positive side of things. And it's a very powerful story. My brother was actually a war correspondent, and he had made a trip to Serbia. And as part of his kind of scooping for a story, he saw a young girl who was wandering the streets with a backpack. And so my brother kind of noticed that, you know, you never see children playing on the streets in these war-torn countries, and he had visited many. So he followed this little girl and saw that she had headed to an empty park and sat under a tree. And he asked her, you know, he approached her and he said, you know, what are you doing? And she said, oh, I'm here, I'm just studying, I'm waiting for, you know, I just want to be ready when school starts. And so my brother realized that, you know, there were no other children, and what was she talking about? And she said, oh, well, can't you see? And she pointed to this kind of ravaged park, and she said, that's where the classroom's going to be. This is the playground that we're going to sit in. And she took out some books from her backpack, which were tattered comic books, and said, you know, and these are my books, and when we are ready, school will open, and I'll be the first one here. And it was just such a powerful moment for him, and in the telling of that story for me, of realizing that, one, children are positive, and children are hopeful, but that they are really the ones that are most affected by this war and violence, which they do not beget upon themselves. They are the innocent victims, and it's just, it is a sad reality, but they also are kind of that first glimmer of hope for a better tomorrow.
Absolutely, and wow, just the image of that, a child just waiting for a future to open up before her. I mean, you know, that's a luminary right there.
Unbelievable.
And where would we be without the children of our world? Unfortunately, I don't think we honor them as we should. You know, your father, and as I said, the experiences that you have, is there any particular story you can share with us about the famous Deepak Chopra, who I have meditated with? He and
sure.
Simon and Seduction of Spirit in La Jolla, California, in, at the center, the Chopra Center. Now, that was a mind-boggling experience. So many different forms of meditation. I happen to be, like you, a fan of TM. TM is Transcendental Meditation, for those of you that don't meditate. And but, I mean, the different experiences, and the one that I thought I would never really attach to was Sufi dancing. And the whirling was just, created a whole space onto yourself, and you became literally the center of the world. Just incredible experiences. So, you know, I could share 1,000 experiences just from that week alone, and I've been meditating for many, many years. Actually, I run meditation workshops and teach meditation. And so for me, that was very powerful. How about you, all of your life? Is there anything, one particular story that just kind of sticks out in your mind?
You know, I don't think a particular story in the sense that, you know, there's any certain moment. Like, again, for me and my brother, my father was just our father. Because of my father, we were fortunate, maybe not realizing while we were young, that we were just blessed by, one, most importantly, being given a sense of stability and a spiritual centeredness, which both my mother and father inculcated in us. But we were also, you know, surrounded by absolutely fascinating people, whether they were, like we talked about, spiritual luminaries or celebrities or thinkers, great thinkers, or politicians. So we really got to meet a fascinating mix of personalities. And so I think I've realized that later in life, the blessing that was, and that's kind of one of my goals in this new project, the intent, is to create a space where these great voices have a platform to speak. So whether it's scientists like Amit Goswami or writers like Marianne Williamson and Larry Dossey or Bernie Siegel, how do we kind of bring these great voices that I was very blessed with growing up together to interact with a larger community? So that's been really kind of the gift that I was, that I realize now, years later, that we didn't necessarily realize growing up. Our father was frankly just our father. We never thought of
him. I think this question we have from Mike from California is probably going to address the other aspect of growing up, Deepak. What was it like growing up as the daughter of Deepak? Any problems in dating, discipline, or the usual father-daughter conflict? We want the scoop.
Yeah, this is funny. So like I said, my dad was my dad, and yes, absolutely, there was, he was, my dad's motto in life, which he really did translate into our relationship, was one, don't take life too seriously. So, in general, my parents were not disciplinarians. I was always more of kind of the academic and very kind of pushing myself. My brother was much more relaxed than I was, so I have to say he tested my parents on that front more. But I think my father definitely had the philosophy that we each have our unique talents, and that, if we can nurture those unique talents, and my brother, who has ended up being phenomenally successful and more focused on creativity and has launched a comic book company and done other things and was a war correspondent. So I think my parents, both of them, and definitely my father, definitely walked the walk. It wasn't just something that they spoke outside and then did something different. To this day, I'm best friends with my brother, my mother, and my father. We're a very close unit. I work with both my brother and my dad, and we talk like 5 times a day. Frankly, my dad harasses me and my brother, and I think he uses the fact that we work together as an excuse to call us like every hour, basically, which drives us nuts sometimes. But it's been, we're very fortunate to have that relationship, and we've gone all through our growing pains like any family would. But they've been very supportive and open on the dating front. I dated different people, I think, like any father. My dad got stressed about it. But when I met my husband, he and my husband really get along and play golf. And, my husband likes to cook, and so they hang out and they talk about business, which my dad in general doesn't really get, but he taps into my husband's wisdom. And then my brother's wife is actually, my husband is Indian, my brother's wife is Chinese American, and she's a doctor. So I think my parents were also always loved the idea of having a global family.
Well,
so we're lucky.
We're very fortunate. It sounds like it. I did have to admit that when I first heard your brother Gotham's name, all I could think of was Gotham City. And at the time, I just thought, wow, I wonder where they decided to get the name from. But then later, when I heard that when I was doing the research and I read that he has a comic company, and that you're a board member on Virgin Comics, I thought that was just wonderful. You wonder how much our names, like yours, Malika, Queen, Gotham, going into that arena. I wonder how, it makes you wonder how much we are influenced by our names.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, my brother was named after the Buddha. So Gautama Buddha was the original name of Buddha. So, of course, that being said, my brother went into the comic book industry, and often people are like, oh my, in fact, I know when we launched the company on a lot of the community boards, we'd see these young kids who would say, dude, that's so cool, Deepak Chopra is so into comic books, he named his son after, the Batman city. which we always found really funny, yeah. But absolutely, we definitely believe in name and form. And again, that intent of name, you know, whether even in my daughter's names, Tara, who is the goddess of compassion, and my daughter is, you know, that form of being the most compassionate being that I have interacted with, and my younger daughter, whose name is Leela, and that stands for the play of the universe. And she is that little play dancing in the universe all the time. So, and likewise, my nephew, my brother has had a son now whose name is Krishan, after the god Krishna, and also remembering my grandfather, who was named Krishan as well.
Well, you know, we have a question from Atara in Maryland, and her question is, in your book, 100 Questions from My Child, what was the hardest question you ever received from Tara and why?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the book was inspired by when my daughter, Tara, who actually now thinking back on it, was extremely aware and sensitive at a very young age. You know, at that age, we start asking question after question after question, and it's difficult questions. For example, a raccoon ate our goldfish, and one day they were gone, and my daughter at 3 is looking for her goldfish and saying, you know, what happened to the goldfish, and how do you, you know, as a parent, you're on the spot, or why did Ma, who was my grandmother, why does she look like she's suffering so much? She was old, and she aged and really suffered in pain. Or why do bad things happen to good people? You know, after the September 11th, or you know, the shootings in schools, our children, you know, even at young children now, hear about these stories, and they're trying to process it. And sometimes the way in which we answer those questions really sets the stage of their security, but also how they're going to approach questions for the rest of their life. So, you know, that was really the inspiration for the book, is that how, as parents, are we kind of setting the stage for our children's journey of questioning throughout their life. I think the hardest questions are the questions around suffering. I find, you know, I think even questions around death, surprisingly, I found that children seem to understand that. I have not had someone, you know, a direct, very close relative in my family pass away. Well, we did have or do have a cousin who went through a brain tumor and in the chemotherapy went blind and deaf. And my daughter from the age of 2 on experienced that with us. And, you know, the questions she wants to understand when we're in India and she sees poor children, which even a 5-year-old can see that those children, you know, are hungry and are begging. She doesn't really understand why that's happening. And as a parent, there are no easy explanations as to why that's happening. So those are the difficult ones. And I think we approach it as in, you know, it is a discussion. It's an exploration. And there doesn't necessarily always need to be an answer from our side.
Well, I absolutely agree. Sometimes some of the questions about those types of things, a couple of weeks ago, my grandsons and I had taken them to a cultural symposium that I had helped to put on in our area here, and we were watching a movie, which is going to be a future guest of ours, Jacqueline Salum's Slingshot Hip Hop, which went to Sundance. And there were a lot of scenes of war in the Palestinian territories. And my grandson was just blown away. It was so sad for him. He asked us to leave. He said, "This is too sad. I can't watch this." He's 10
yeah.
years old. And it's just amazing. John in New York would like to know, when you meet new people and the conversations turn to books and literature, besides your own work, what reading materials do you recommend for any range of reasons?
That's a good question. You know, I am, as a mom of a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, to be honest, these days I don't get much time reading. I'm more of an online person, so and I personally love reading about, I'm totally obsessed with politics and things like that, so I spend a lot of time on those types of sites. But that said, you know, I think in the space of wellness, you know, there are some great teachers and friends of my father's, whether it's people like Marianne Williamson. You know, again, I'm a big fan of Christian Northrup and what she's done on the health and women's. She has a beautiful book on women and daughters, which I appreciate tremendously. And then, frankly, I'm a huge fan of literature, you know, and that ability of us to kind of go into a mythical world. So whether it's writers, and I am kind of more attuned to some of the Indian writers like Champa Lahiri and Salman Rushdie and others. With my children, we focus a lot on mythology. And so the great mythological stories, not just from India, but from the Western civilizations and from China and Africa, again, which use fable and myth to tell just stories and expand our children's creativity. So, which goes into why my brother has also ended up in the comic book industry and creating new myths.
And for those of you that have just joined us, we are our interview tonight is with Malika Chopra, author, producer, blogger. That's another thing we haven't touched on yet.
Yep.
Clubmom.com. That's now I've been to that site.
Yes.
And it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Intent blog. Now you run Intent blog with your brother, correct?
Yes. So the story behind Intent blog is, you know, for the guy who asked about my dad. Basically, you know, my brother and I manage my dad's media efforts, and my dad is a content machine, literally. He writes 4 books a year, and he's constantly, you know, the time it takes for him to finish a book and actually publish a book is like a 9-month period before, you know, he turns in a book and it takes 9 months before it comes out. And by the time it comes out, he's probably written 4 more books. So my brother and I started Intent Blog literally just to get my dad off our backs because he just kept creating content. And so we thought, you know what, let's just get him, like, let's set up a blog so that he could just write whenever he wants. So that was really the genesis of Intent Blog. And now what I'm doing is Intent Blog is still running. And like I said, we're launching this new site, again, using that concept of intent. And what we've done is kind of taken what you see at Intent Blog to a new level, which is really working with the best content providers from around the world, whether it's the Belief Nets or Yahoo's or Body and Soul magazine and other great voices like the Marianne Williamsons and Christiane Northrups who I had mentioned, and really now kind of taking it to the next level. So Intent Blog is up and running, and we all blog there. But our new site will officially launch in the fall, and again, people can get a sneak peek at it at our beta site, which is actually at beta.intent.com. So that's, again, only been open for about 4 days, so it's very, very early on.
Well, I think it's wonderful. I know I have a slew of books from your father's work, and not only that, I have The Gift of Love, which is an incredible roomy, you know, let me say this, and because I've been dying to say this to you, you know,
sure.
When you know, you reach a place of knowing, and when you know, you know,
yes.
And everything else doesn't matter at that point, and a lot of these luminaries are all saying really, literally, the same things. But
absolutely.
There's just something incredibly beautiful about your father's voice. And
thank
for me,
you.
I always said, if I'm going to be listening to the same thing, the thing that I know, I'd like to be listening to it from a voice like Deepak Chopra's.
That's nice.
And I think I think his audio is just unbelievable.
Absolutely.
And I know you do part of, you've worked on part of his audio, haven't you?
Yeah, we, you know, again, my brother and I have, frankly, I was at home with my children, and it was a nice way to kind of work part-time and take advantage of helping my dad get his message out there in different ways. So we he also produced a radio show which has been on Sirius Satellite Radio, and soon hopefully we'll be bringing online through Intent as well. You know, we've done some film projects, one on How to Know God, another on the Seven Spiritual Laws of Success, which features Olivia Newton-John. We've done different media projects, from audios to products, etc. So, you know, it's been nice to kind of take my dad's energy and be able to package it in different ways that add value.
Well, I think you've done a brilliant job, you, your brother, and the group that works within the production company, because some of this is just, you know, I you could listen to it forever, especially when you're listening to him read it from the Bhagavad Gita. You know, the ancient saying is that if you listen to the Gita enough, you will become enlightened. We have a question from Jack from Indiana. Enough of my reminiscing. It's like I'm over here going, it's because he really has been an important part of my life, and I just wanted you to know that.
That's wonderful. That's the biggest gift that I think in my family we've seen is that, you know, the real very effects that my father's work has had on people, which is lovely.
Thank you, and thank him for me again. Jack from Indiana, regarding your kids, what promises have you found hard to keep? And the question is hard to answer, and which were easy?
So, I mean, definitely the hardest promise, which I don't think actually made it into the book, was I at one point had a promise. I promised to never say no to you, which I realized right away, was about not totally impossible. So that's definitely been probably the most challenging one. In terms of the questions, again, the questions, honestly, in general, I find that the questions about suffering, the questions about poverty or inequality are very difficult. And those are ones that really, you know, if my daughter asks me a question about why, you know, mommy, what's a bomb, which is something she asked me after the bombings in Spain. And, you know, you can explain what a bomb is, but why, you know, why would someone use something like that to hurt other people? Or if God is always watching, why do bad things happen to good people? Those are the difficult questions. The questions that I love are the questions that she asks and she answers herself, like, do trees have feelings? And for her, there's no question trees have feelings. Their branches reach out into the sky and hug the planet. Or where do snowmen go and how do they come back? And that's just the story of reincarnation. And it's really, she has taught me, and my younger one now has taught me so many beautiful lessons about life, just through their innocence of both asking and answering questions.
Well, that sort of answers Jose from Boise's question, too, because he also asked which of these promises had you found harder to keep than others. We have a question from Eric in Iowa, but I'm not even going to attempt this one because I don't think I know the bit that he's referring to. Eric in Iowa, what did you think of the recent Daily Show bit with the smiley face guy? Now, I'm afraid I must have missed that one. I don't watch a lot of TV.
I'm wondering. I think he's probably referring to my father was recently on the Daily Show. That said, I have to admit, I didn't watch it, so I don't know what he's referring to. And that's another question. Everybody,
I would have watched it had I known.
Well, I think everybody assumes, one of the things that my brother and I find funny, frankly, is that everyone assumes that, one, we know what we're talking about because we're my dad's kids, and, you know, we are not specialists in, we're not doctors and we're not specialists in this space, yet people sometimes think we are. And then the other big secret is that we have not read nearly half of my dad's books, if that. We kind of hear about it all the time, but we very rarely sit and actually read a full book. So the assumption that we know everything is actually not accurate.
Well, you know, that's kind of funny because Max Simon said this, he's the son of David Simon, in an interview we had with him recently. He sort of alluded to the same type of thing. It's like it was just bad.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, no, exactly. And Max is, again, you know, Max is doing great work with meditation and bringing it to a younger audience, and he's involved in my new project, Intent. And but same thing, Max, we always laugh that, you know, there's that assumption that we ourselves, you know, people come and ask me and my brother questions of, like, what supplements they should take because they have diabetes, or, you know, what we think about, you know, a certain yoga pose. Not that my dad would know about that either, but, like, they just assume that we kind of have all this great knowledge, which we admittedly do not.
Do you teach your children to meditate, Malika?
Absolutely. I taught my daughter, well, actually, I didn't teach my daughter to meditate. My father taught my daughter to meditate. So when she was about 5 years old, my dad took her to, they live in La Jolla, he took her to the beach over there, and they sat together and they talked, and he gave her a secret word of wisdom. And so it was a very special bonding moment between both of them. And I always say to my husband, one day she'll realize how special that was, that her grandfather taught her how to meditate. She loves meditating.
That's big. I know one of the things that I work with constantly, and it's a very difficult process to teach children to meditate, but I think that we can help ground them in their space long enough for them to become more comfortable with quiet time within themselves. And those are some of the techniques that I've often taught in my classes and workshops, is this bringing them back into their bodies. I know that, you know, especially with the work that I've done with one of my grandsons, who we believe is unbelievably gifted. And he is so gifted that he is hypersensitive, and a lot of these children are hypersensitive. And when he's fully in his body, he tends to have a lot of pain, and we have to work with that in order to help him become more comfortable there. And that's part of it. It is, and you know, the beach is a wonderful, digging our feet in the beach sand until we feel the wetness. That's big.
Being in nature is very important for children to connect and experience. And yeah, I think, you know, Tara Guber, who's involved with the foundation called Yoga Ed, and does wonderful things with children. They use the term time in instead of time out, which I've always loved.
Oh, so, I like that. Yeah, that's a beautiful way of putting it. Beautiful. Well, you know, this has just been incredible. What are you briefly, you know, we don't have a lot of time left, but I would like to, now outside of Intent, your Intent blog, what is it, moms.com? Let's see where I have that written down. Club Mom, I'm sorry. Club Mom, that's what it is. I love that. Club Mom, that like seems, it should be a spa, I think, for mothers.
Sure.
Which is like, you know, we're going to go to Club Mom now. Do you have anything?
Honestly, right now, you know, for me right now, I am, like I said, I've taken a huge shift in my own life now, of kind of really diving into this new project, Intent. So that is taking all of my time these days, of really building this new site, which will be ultimately intent.com, but right now it's under beta.intent.com.
Well, I appreciate you being with us. This has been truly an honor for me. I'm thrilled to have your caliber of guests. I'm thrilled to have the type of work that you do here. I think it's just ultimately so important. And as you can see from all of our questions, Malika, everybody seems really quite fascinated and taken by this process of promising children and keeping promises and that type of thing. I think it's I have to repeat this. I said it at the beginning of the show. I think your book is bigger than most people can imagine.
Thank you. That's very sweet of you. You know, it honestly has been the journey that I've gone through with my children, so it's a very special for me. You know, those the two books really represent a very special time in our life together.
Well, it has been a pleasure. Tomorrow night, ladies and gentlemen, we have Elizabeth De La Vega, a veteran Justice Department attorney who served under Presidents Reagan, Bush, the one, Clinton, and Bush the second. And our guest Wednesday, she will be our guest on Wednesday tomorrow night with the People Speak. Our host will be David Swanson, and I will be seeing you next week. Malika, thank you so much for being with us. Good luck with your work. Good luck with your book.
Thank you.
And the children are grateful. I know that.
Thank you. Yeah, they're wonderful. Thank you.
Have a good evening. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Right.
That's it. We're going to call it a night.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of the summer people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream Water.